Blog Talk Radio.
Well, good evening, everyone. This is Bonnie Kay, and welcome to the Straight Wives Talk Show. And that's what I'm hoping for all of you, a bright, sunshiny day once the clouds are cleared and you can see clearly and put your life back on track. This is a hard-hitting show that talks about the complexity of marriages between straight women to gay men. And each week, my guests and I discuss issues that affect over 4 million women in our country and millions more around the world who find themselves unknowingly married to a gay or bisexual man. Before I introduce my very special guest for tonight, I just want to make a couple of announcements. My newsletter went out last week, and I talked about women who were ready to fight for my Straight Wives Matter campaign as far as changing the laws for divorce so that women who are either in abusive situations, whether it be a situation where that we have, women with domestic violence, other kinds of problems when they go for a divorce where it's no fault, that there should be fault, and that we shouldn't be ending up paying for all of the bills and for something that we've done nothing wrong in. And I've had some wonderful responses from you. I want to thank my listeners as far as volunteering, that you're ready to do something about it this time. And we're going to talk to different state representatives about changing some of these divorce laws because straight wives do matter, even though we're minimized. And if you'd be interested in helping me with this campaign, please write to me at bonkay@aol.com. That's bonkaye@aol.com. Also, we're only 4 weekends away, it looks like, from our, maybe 5, depending on how the month goes, from our healing weekend at the end of April. Here on April 29th and 30th here in Philadelphia, down by the airport. And we have women coming in from all over the country that I'm really excited about seeing again or meeting for the first time. We have some wonderful speakers and groups. I'll be talking more about that in the next week or two with some of the special guests that we have coming on who will be there. So if you're still interested in coming, even though it's a little late, there's still room for a couple more. please write to me at bonk@aol.com, and I'll send you out the information. So today, I would like to introduce, or tonight, I'd like to introduce a very wonderful woman who I'm so proud to know because she really has made a difference in a lot of my thinking and understanding things in the field of post-traumatic stress disorder. Marian is a therapist who has been working in this field for a long time, and I actually have the ultimate pleasure of meeting her in person when I went to New York a couple of years ago, and I was so impressed by the work she's doing and how it's helping women who are in our situation. So, Marian, thank you so much for coming back.
Thank you for having me, Bonnie. It's good to be here. I love that song, your opening song. It's so appropriate.
I play it every week because it is true that once you can see clearly, everything seems to change. And
so true.
I know that you work with women. You have a support group for destructive relationships online that you know, women can access. You're a therapist in New Jersey. So
yeah, and we have a live group also in New Jersey every week that meets every week. And there's another one that an offshoot that started in northern New Jersey that just started meeting three times a month. So that's exciting to me.
Okay, that's great. Really great. And we'll get people the information for that before we, you know, hang up tonight.
Okay.
But one of the things that I've learned a lot about from you, of course, is what you specialize in, post-traumatic stress disorder, which traditionally I never really equated, you know, what women go through with that diagnosis because of the fact that whenever I was, when I was getting older and growing up and going to school, when I learned about PTSD, it was always in context to people coming back from war.
Yeah.
So I didn't quite make the connection. So maybe you could talk a little bit about that.
Okay.
And how it's evolved.
That's post-traumatic stress disorder. That diagnosis came into existence because of veterans, and it was because of war. You know, they initially called it shell shock, if you remember that. And it's still, to this day, in the Diagnostic Statistical Manual of the Psychological Association, PTSD is explained as something that is a traumatic event, like a war or a rape or a car accident or 9/11 or something like that. And it's related to an event in which you were your body or your psychological structure somehow was threatened, and you were facing death in some way, and you are helpless to do anything about it. And that's what happens, and that's what causes the syndrome that most people would probably be familiar with, that you hear about with veterans, like nightmares and night terrors and flashbacks, okay? But then down the line, it can turn into things like just, you know, panic attacks, anxiety disorder, depression, rages, okay? So that's basically what, you know, that's what the diagnosis is. But there's another kind of post-traumatic stress that's not so much recognized. Bessel van der Kolk, who has been researching trauma his whole life and has a center, he's written some great books if anyone is interested. The latest one is called The Body Keeps the Score. So if anyone is interested in trauma, that is a fantastic book to read. He and other colleagues tried to get them, the Psychological Association, to put in another category of post-traumatic stress called developmental trauma. Now, that would deal more with ongoing trauma that happens over a period of time, not just an event, okay? So that could involve, like, childhood abuse of different kinds, or bullying, or neglect, or it can happen in like a cult or a relationship like what we're talking about. It can be something that happens over a period of time but has the same, maybe even more debilitating effects than a post-traumatic event. Making sense so far?
So it would be more of an ongoing lifestyle that you're leading, whether it be an abusive marriage or joining a cult group. It's not just a one-time type of event. Right.
Exactly. Now, the event trauma, like if everyone in this area, probably, I guess in Philadelphia too, but everyone in the area of New Jersey, where we're close to New York when 9/11 happened and we could see the smoke and all that stuff, you know, and how scary it was. So the people in the area, even if you weren't directly affected by it, still felt that threat. And then after that, everyone had a feel, you know, it lingers and you start to, and you don't feel safe anymore. Okay, you just don't feel safe. And but then eventually, you know, it kind of goes away. You always remember it. Sometimes it might come back at you, but for the most part, it fades if nothing else happens. But the kind of trauma that happens in a relationship, which is ongoing, it causes the body to also go into a survival mode. So if you were in an event trauma, you know, something like a car accident, for instance, you saw you were about to go into a car accident, or you're about to be attacked by a wild dog or something, you know, a dog roaming the neighborhood that would be vicious. Your body would go into fight or flight, right? It would go into survival mode. The heart would start pounding. The blood would flow to your large muscles, so you could use them if you needed to run or to fight. Your senses will become very alert and prepared and heightened, and so that, you know, that can happen in event. But if you're in an ongoing relationship in which there is deceit, abuse, control, ongoing, the body still goes into fight or flight all the time. And maybe not in dramatic ways, maybe sometimes dramatic ways, but also in a lot of little ways. Like, for instance, let's say there's deceit in the relationship, which, you know, everyone in your organization has probably dealt with, right? So something happens in the relationship that seems a little weird or sketchy, and the person tells you, which is ultimately a lie, but they tell you something that doesn't quite make sense, you know, or that seems weird, and you feel uneasy about it. And then maybe after that, you start to react to things that seem a little not right. You know, you start feeling like uneasy and not quite grounded in the relationship. That's just one small thing. But
how
the fight or flight thing is significant. What's that?
How about relationships where there's a lot of physical abuse?
Well, then you have a lot of that. You know, you have that kind of a physical abuse is you know, an event trauma that goes over and over and over.
Repeated, right?
And even if there's just like a lot of verbal abuse or manipulation or demeaning kinds of actions, it has the effect of causing what's called a victim syndrome, you know, like very slowly, gradually, it doesn't feel safe maybe to speak or give your opinion or just be yourself. You know, you're getting angry or bad reactions to a lot of things, and so you start to kind of withdraw, and then you kind of are trying to just navigate the relationship and not get the other person mad, right? And you're walking on eggs, and then that fight or flight turns into kind of hypervigilance. You know, hypervigilance. Mm-hmm. I want to be careful. I don't do something that I don't want to say the wrong thing, or I don't want to confront this person, or I never know what this person is going to be like, so I always have to be on edge, you know. And then when you're surviving in a relationship, abuse of any kind, the other survival technique is to freeze. So that in order to get through it, we kind of dissociate. We kind of like glaze over. We space out. We, you know, kind of push it aside and just keep going. But all those things have terrible effects on us psychologically and physically.
And I think there's long-term effects. You know, I think the longer you stay in a relationship that is damaging, whether it's physical abuse, emotional abuse, mental abuse, the longer the time you're in there, the harder it is to really recover from it. And I think more likelihood of post-traumatic stress, because I know that for many of the women that I work with who were in emotionally abusive marriages, they get into another relationship and, you know, there's so many things that just stop them from being successful in that relationship because they haven't really taken over their life and gotten it back yet. In other words, I always tell women that when you come out of an abusive relationship or a destructive relationship, you have to really find yourself again. And that could take a year, 2 years, right?
At least a year. At least a year. Because, you know, in an abusive relationship, you're losing yourself, you know, little by little, like just trying to cope with what this, you know, what with the person's behavior or unpredictability. You're so focused, so much energy goes into kind of just surviving with that person. Even if you're not really consciously aware of it, it's still there. And as a result of that, you begin to lose yourself. And then if you know, at the end of all this, you find out that the person isn't who you thought they were, or what, you know, if there was a deceit, that's more like an event trauma. That's a powerfully traumatic thing. And all of these things, like completely rupture trust, you know, it starts, you know, like, so if you jump right into a relationship after that, you're just not in any shape to really be vulnerable. You haven't recovered yourself yet, like you said. It really does take time. Do you find that people want to jump back into relationships afterwards?
Well, the problem is that when you've been neglected for so long, emotionally, physically, sexually, intimately, and you've lost, you know, all your feminine, you know, spirit, that many women are just, you know, wanting to go out and meet someone who can fulfill their dreams that have been dashed and killed. And
I see.
So some women either go into retreat, like they're not going to be meeting anybody ever again, at least immediately. That will change in time, hopefully. But other women just go out there and, you know, they have terrible things happen because of the fact they are so vulnerable. And these guys can, you know, they smell you like a shark smells blood.
Vulnerable and damaged.
They know when you're damaged because these guys are predators. And they don't have to be gay. I mean, gay was your first issue with your husband that had a destructive relationship. So there's lots of predators out there who are narcissists, sociopaths, and we deal with them all the time, and they're straight. It has nothing to do with their sexuality. It just has to do with abuse, and they look for women like us. They look for women who are vulnerable, who are kind, who are nurturing, who are used to giving in, who are willing to put up with a lot of things that other people don't put up with because we don't feel good enough about ourselves to say no.
Right, and maybe like you said, coming out of a marriage where you're married to a gay man, you might feel like a little desperate or like time is of the essence now, and you know you just don't want to waste time, and that of course makes you vulnerable, like you said, to other people who could be predators.
And that's what happens, and it's very rare that if you meet somebody right away, that's going to be your life mate or soulmate, because you're not looking clearly, you're thinking clearly, and you're trying to find things and make it. Excuses why things may not be right. You're once again that hope against hope. I can fix this. You know, a lot of us are very much fixer-uppers.
But it's also looking for someone else to fix you. Like you said, that year or so after a damaging relationship like this, and getting back on your feet and finding yourself and healing and all that stuff, it's a lot of work, and there's pain involved and even grief, right?
A lot of mourning.
And, you know, rebuilding your life. I mean, that's all hard work. So sometimes instead of doing that, it could be tempting to say, well, let me just find the right person and then I'll be happy. You know, let me just get someone and then this will all go away. And that's what makes you vulnerable, you know, because you're
right.
Just,
and especially when these guys play up to you and they know how to manipulate you, you know, like all good narcissists, they come to you, they make you feel important, loved. That they can
love
make
bomb.
Your life. You know, it's just amazing how you fall for it because you're so desperate to be loved. So the problem is that even when you meet a good man, so this is where the post-traumatic stress comes in. Let's say you do wait, and let's say, you know, it's a couple years down the line and you're starting to feel better, and then you meet someone and you just aren't healthy enough yet to be in a relationship because you haven't really dealt with those issues of the post-traumatic stress kind, where if somebody reacts a certain way and it reminds you of your marriage, right away you're freezing up. Or you're saying, well, he must be the same. Even if he's not the same.
Right.
Even if he's totally different, you don't trust. And is that an issue you work with much in your relationships with people who are different?
Absolutely. Like you said, people who tend to date before they're, you know, really healed, they tend to just find little things wrong with every person they date. you know, stupid things. You know, they focus on like little things. Oh, I don't like the way that they eat. So, well, that's perfectly done. You know, it's but really they're just not ready. You know, because they can't, they don't feel like they can trust anyone. But then down the line, even after they've healed, and I've seen some people do some really strong, good healing work, and then they go out and they're careful and they can be successful. You know, but they're still always a little bit, like you say, like, oh, I hope I can trust this person. They seem nice, but are they nice? You know, because the first time around, I thought this was the right person and a good person, but it didn't turn out to be true. So what makes me think that I can even, number one, choose the right person, and number two, that I can trust what I see.
Marianne. We don't even trust ourselves, so it's really hard to go and trust someone else, and that's one of the issues that our women really struggle with is self-trust. And I made this mistake, and this was a long-term marriage, and somebody was living a lie with you. It could be for 10 years, 20, or 30 or more. And here you live a life. You've given up, 30 years of your life to be with someone who isn't even who you thought he was. Who had a whole secret life. You know, some of our women find out because they go to doctors and learn they have an STD given to them by their, husband. You know, we have all kinds of situations where the way they find out, it's not like their husband suddenly became honest.
Right.
And then a lot of times the husband will throw it back at them and say, well, I didn't give it to you. You must have been out there doing something. So as bad as you feel and embarrassed as you feel, and even though you weren't doing anything, you feel guilty that you accuse someone who's looking at you like you're crazy for accusing me. So there's so many issues that they go with and so many ways that they stop trusting themselves, the women who are part of this network. And it really takes, a lot of work on yourself before you can really trust someone again. I know for myself, over 23 years of my relationship and for those early years, it was really hard for me because I kept going back to everything. If I said something and I didn't get the right response, I'm back to the relationship before that was terrible. So I think that we really struggle with getting better, but you can't even think about going with somebody. And it was 11 years for me in between. It wasn't like I didn't try to work on myself.
Yeah, wow, 11 years, wow. So how did you work through that with your partner, new partner?
I took a lot of reassurance on his part. I mean, he knew what I was dealing with.
Mm-hmm.
And, I had to learn to make some changes too. I mean, I always tell this story, and it's so true that, he would do something that he had no idea that I was upset by it because men are different than women. And he may not be as emotional.
And everybody is.
Right. I would be upset, not intentionally, but, if he didn't ask me something or he didn't say something, and I would say, he should have thought of that. And then he'd say, well, what's the matter? I said, what are you upset about? I said, well, you should know. He said, well, yeah, can you tell me? I said, no, I'm not telling. You should know. And he would say to me, finally, do you think I'm a mind reader? If you tell me what's wrong. But I didn't have those communication skills because I came out of a relationship where there was no communication.
Right. There wasn't a
genuine
person.
So I didn't know how to correctly
communicate. Indeed.
Right. And that was one of my problems.
That's a whole other thing, isn't it? Well,
exactly,
you know,
it is.
And that's a lot of people's problem in a marriage, learning to communicate. Not too many people do it very successfully. But you did find someone that you could communicate with. I think that's an important thing.
In
relationships, wounds are always being triggered. You know, childhood wounds, beliefs about ourselves that are negative. They get triggered worse in a relationship than any other place in our life, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because there's so much at stake. And I could go into that, but I won't. But, it's why that happens. But the important thing, this is what I tell women, this is what we talk about in my group sometimes, because people say, well, how do I know I'm not going to find another sociopath or narcissist or whatever, or abusive person? How am I going to know? I mean, because, that other person was great at the beginning. What are the signs? Well, one of the major things is that someone can be honest, right? Someone who, you tell me, Bonnie, in a situation where you have a gay man marrying a straight woman, are they honest about other things? Are they kind of superficial and don't really, work through conflict, talk about their feelings, are empathetic? That's what makes a good partner, right? That's how you know you're with someone you can work things through and who has the ability to care for you. If they have
there
feelings,
are women who
if
have
they can empathize. I'm sorry, go ahead.
There are women who have husbands who are what they think, you know, their very best friend.
Ah.
You know, they do everything together. They talk everything out. The only thing is when they find out that this husband isn't the husband they thought they had, because
right.
he has a boyfriend on the side and he's been cheating on her.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not the, so much the infidelity, because marriages have infidelity.
Mm-hmm.
But it's the sexuality, lying about who you are all this time.
Oh,
and there's
yeah.
always an emotional distance. You know, you could have to be the best of friends of being like you're living with a brother. But when
yeah.
you're sexually rejected in time, that really wears on you. And, you know, it takes away who you are as a woman. So
sure.
some women just learn to accept it because the men convince them, well, look, you know, why are you so sexually overcrazed? Or, you know, people always go through these problems, or I have physical problems. You know, they'll use every excuse in the world but the truth.
Mm-hmm.
So then you start second-guessing yourself. You know, the women who have the hardest times are the women who have the great relationships. Because when they
yeah.
find out about the infidelity and they think, I love this man. I mean, okay, what can I live with? I think we all do the bargaining, what can I live with first?
Mm-hmm.
I know
mm-hmm.
I certainly did. I mean,
oh,
when
sure.
I found out.
You don't just.
I said,
yeah.
I always said, you know, my ex-husband could every 6 months go away for a couple hours, and I never had to know what he was doing. I guess I could live with it. But, you know, what can you really live with? Because having that over your head all the time, I mean, you try to bargain, but it's not that simple, because they just can't go by that bargain. When they want something, they want it, and they go for it. So you end
right.
up losing
That's
on the bargaining
true.
Stage. Right?
Right, right. Because, you know, if you give them some of that, that's really what they want anyway. So you're going to be left in the dust, right?
I always say if you give an inch, they take a foot. You know, once you give permission
right.
or you say, well, I can live with it, then they just start, you know, really taking advantage of it. Very few really live by those standards. But
right.
women sometimes, unlike destructive marriages that you work with so much,
mm-hmm.
I would say that about a third of these marriages, about two-thirds are very destructive, about a third are not destructive.
Mm.
They're very loving marriages, loving in the sense of a brother and sister would love each other, or a family
right.
unit would love each other. And these women may knew that something was off with their sex life, but they never suspected gay.
Mm.
Because we don't understand gay. We don't understand
mm-hmm.
why would a gay person want to marry a straight person? I mean, what is that
right.
about?
Mm-hmm.
So they're really thrown off, and then when they find out, the sense of betrayal is so much greater. And then it seems
yeah.
even the ones who have the great relationships, there's a lot of things they first see clearly about now, that there was a lot of control involved, even if it was in a nice way. Because when
there
you're living a lie on a day-to-day basis, you have
right.
to control the situation, right?
Of course, yep.
You know, they understand now why there was missing time, missing periods, missing this, missing that. You know, things start coming together, so now they can have a better understanding. That's something that they wouldn't suspect before. There were always
yeah.
excuses these guys could make, and you would buy them, because why would you
right.
think it's a gay thing?
Right.
So these are the women that suffer the most, because they really thought they had a wonderful relationship, but wasn't destructive to them, and now they're losing it, because the men don't want to stay anymore.
Yeah, that's
yeah.
Wow.
They're on their way
that's
to their
trauma.
New life, because they met some guy, and they fell in love.
Right, right. So for
so
a woman to move on from something like that, yeah, I mean...
Yeah, I mean, the ones that have destructive relationships, I think they deal better. Hmm?
What is the like when women are looking for a new partner, a heterosexual partner, what is the hardest thing for them to figure out? Is it just the idea of, you know, the person just having lived through so much deceit that they're worried
yes.
that they'll be deceived again?
Yes. Absolutely.
Uh-huh.
That's the biggest
okay.
fear.
Or that
how can I trust
gay
that I'm
men
gonna...
somehow?
And, you know, and of course, you're part of the network that so many of my women that I pushed them through Donna Anderson's program on love fraud.
Mm-hmm.
So you start learning about every kind of, you know, undesirable person in the world. And Donna's been a guest on our show a number of times. And, you know, she talks about it also, about, you know, women and the kinds of sociopaths and narcissists that are out there.
Mm-hmm.
And some of the men who are part of our network, the gay husbands, have all those qualities, lack of qualities.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. No, personality defects, I'm sorry. Also, Because when you're living a lie, a lot of times, you know, your life just revolves around you. You're really not that interested in anybody else. And, you know, some of these men have really bad sociopathic behaviors as well. So it's a combination of everything.
Mm,
so going out
yes.
to somebody, some women just say, I'm done. I've had it. It's been mm-hmm, 30 years. Mm-hmm. I'm not looking.
Yeah.
And other women say, look, I missed out on, you know, having a loving, kind relationship. I want to meet someone. And some of our women, I always like to promote them, those who have a happily ever after marriages again or
mm-hmm.
relationships because they do meet their soulmates.
Yeah.
But you have to be able to trust yourself to find the right person. And
mm-hmm.
I think that's one of the things that's the hardest part. And I know that the work that you do with destructive relationships and post-traumatic stress, a lot of the women, it's not like you can just say goodbye, so long, it's over. When you have children and you're raising them, and that partner has to be part of that, I find that creates a whole new nest of problems.
Oh, yeah.
You find
You'll overlook so much just to keep the family together. Right, because the guilt of breaking the family up, yeah.
Well, it's not so much that. It's that even when they break up, they still have to have contact with each other. It's not like you
that,
can just walk away.
Oh, my God.
And if you, and some of these men are very manipulating. It's not even like they want to have their children for the right reasons.
Right,
they just
want to
do it because,
mm-hmm.
get back at the wife.
They
want to
hurt the other person. They want to hurt the other person.
Hurt the other person.
Yeah.
Exactly.
I know, and it's so tragic. That's the most tragic thing that comes with these relationships that I see, is that the children suffer. You know, the children get
terribly.
Often allied, you know, or alienated from the other parent, and
mm-hmm.
it's just horrible. They get caught up between the – it's just horrible. The families, a divorce is never an easy thing, but children can survive it much easier if the parents are not fighting, number one, and number two, if one is not trying to destroy the other, you know, because usually that involves, splitting the siblings up too somehow. I don't mean physically, but psychologically,
mm-hmm.
it seems like one sibling is always allied with the person, the destructive
exactly.
person.
In our situation, the girls tend to sympathize more with their fathers. You know, mm-hmm. girls try to look at it, oh, poor dad, you know, he didn't want to be gay. Why do you have to divorce him? He loves you. He loves us. Why are you breaking
mm-hmm.
up the family?
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of them blame their mothers for the breakup of the marriage. And
yeah.
the fathers play along with it. I was a good husband. Aren't I a good father? Okay, I have this problem. But why can't your mother love me, promise to love me no matter what? And a lot of these men use their children, which really makes me more ill, as the keeper of their secret. The kids discover their fathers are gay because kids are so computer savvy today. And they find all this gay stuff on the computer that their fathers are doing. And when they confront their fathers, because I have a whole bunch of these kids who have come to me with this, and the fathers say, let's keep it our secret, because if you tell your mother, it's going to break up the family. And how do you think she would feel then?
Oh,
you want to hurt your mother.
Thing to put on a kid.
It's a terrible thing to put on a kid, but it happens in many of our families here. Mm. And that really screws up the kids. And I have all about the articles written by kids who will tell you how it screwed them up. But, you know, that's why, these marriages are so difficult because they're the worst of what you get plus a whole lot more. There's so many other issues when it comes to these marriages that women have to deal with. And also, you know, I think that every single woman who's part of my group, I've never met one who has told me otherwise. I've talked to tens of thousands of women. We're very pro-gay. And I think that's what attracted some of these men to them because they were liberal, because they were understanding.
Mm,
and
they would be more tolerant. Yeah.
They would be more tolerant. But, you know, it's one thing to have gay friends. It's another thing to have a gay husband.
Right.
And people are not very tolerant when it comes to that. And they're not very accepting of it, and nor should they be. It's not something you need to accept. You didn't sign up for it, then you need to get out of it.
Right.
But a lot of times with kids, they don't understand this. And for kids, it's really hard, the issues of questioning their own sexuality. How do you handle it? And I agree very much with you. Like I tell women, if you want to vent, you come to me and let's vent. Don't do it in front of your kids. if you want to say the worst things about your husband, because I know that, you know, I had very bad relationship with my ex when, you know, years in the past when the kids were growing up. And I never, it was so hard for me. I used to bite my tongue constantly not to say bad things about him in front of them.
Yeah.
Even though I wanted
very tempting,
to.
Right? I know.
I know. And I would
especially bite my tongue.
If you're
divorced. If you're divorcing someone, and let's say they don't know the father is gay, would you tell them that?
Yes. I don't believe in keeping these secrets.
Okay.
I've learned now. I used to believe in keeping them for a while.
Mm-hmm.
I used to say in my early writings that there's a time and a place to tell them. Now I just say there's a way to tell them. Because if you don't tell them, someone else will tell them. And
yeah.
I think more important than that, I don't want people to think gay is bad. So why do you keep a secret? You keep a secret when something's wrong.
True.
So I think it's better just to say that, you know, your dad didn't realize it at the time, or, you know, he loved us enough that he thought it wouldn't matter. But, you know,
mm-hmm.
it's not his fault. This is just nature, how it took him.
Right.
You know, I don't
now
want people
he's doing the right thing.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that, but also I would say that the majority of children who are gay had somebody in their family who was gay. So,
mm-hmm.
I mean, no, maybe the studies aren't proving exactly the genetics people are looking for, but many of us have gay children. And it's natural to think that when you have a gay parent, it is genetic. You know, it's not just something that's a learned behavior, homosexuality.
No.
So, you know, if you have that, you don't want your children growing up feeling like gay is wrong.
That's true.
And
that, of course.
Right? And this way, if they
right.
know that their father's gay, at least they can understand it.
Yeah,
I used to say
right.
it's bad to do it because they'll be questioning their own sexuality. Well, maybe they'll question it, but at least if they know that it's not something terrible, that it happens to people and it's not their fault, then maybe
right.
they'll feel better and be able to deal with their situation better.
Exactly. It's one thing to question it, you know, and that's, I mean, in adolescence is a time where you question things anyway, and if you have a gay parent, of course, you might go through that, but in the end, you're going to be who you are. Basically,
exactly.
if you have someone you can talk to,
gay.
If your parents talk
right.
to you, if they can send you to a therapist or whatever, you can work that through without being
mm-hmm.
ashamed, without feeling like it's a shameful thing in case you happen to be gay.
It's just
yeah.
that I feel that secrets destroy families, and eventually this secret
Absolutely.
Gets out. And if
Absolutely.
You get, if it gets out the wrong way, or you hear it from the wrong person, or kids in school know, or, you know, this has happened to many of the kids that I work with. You know, they didn't find out directly from their parents. They had to find out from strangers. And
mm-hmm.
it really devastated them. You know, it got a whole new bunch of issues take place. So
yeah, and
I think
the stigma.
That,
right. I mean, you know, if they find out through someone else, and then, you know, who, you know, their kids might make fun of them, or people might
right.
talk about it or gossip, versus
right.
them finding out about from you, you know, right from the beginning.
And there's a very positive spin you can put on it. You know, when I told my children, you know, I didn't make it like gay was bad or gay was dirty. I said, let's look at all the people you know, that you admire. And I picked out all these gay role models. They had singers and actors,
mm-hmm.
you know, and then we talked about gay. And I would say that, aren't these people great? Well, you know, people don't choose who they are. They just are born that way. And that's the approach I had to take to make it a positive spin, because that's how I wanted my children to feel positive about it.
Mm-hmm.
But I do believe that, you know, it should be a decision that both parents make. Hopefully they can do it together. I try to encourage that.
Mm-hmm.
But when the father doesn't want to do it and he wants to keep living his lie, I tell the women, have a talk with your children. They shouldn't have to feel that this marriage is splitting up because of you. You know,
that's
too much play.
That's so true.
And
that
that's
should
what
always be the case. In divorce, they should never feel like that, that it's their fault.
But I
What's
do tell women, no matter how
in,
bad.
12-step programs, you're sick as your darkest secrets.
Mm-hmm.
Or you're sick as your secrets. Yeah. Secrets make you sick.
But I do tell women also that no matter how angry you are, and you have every right to feel that way, you can't do it in front of the children, and you can't make them your allies.
No.
That's
that
why I have
hurts
a support
them.
Group.
Yeah. Absolutely. I tell people that all the time.
The children are not
yeah.
your allies, and that we have right. a tendency to do that. We really do. I was guilty of it, too.
Mm-hmm.
And it's normal when you're the parent doing everything, and then, you know, you have the Disney World father once in a blue moon coming by,
mm-hmm.
and you're exhausted, and you're frustrated, and you don't have resources, and you are so tired. and you don't want to make them a hero, but I say make them a hero because children come from two parents. And I think you, as a therapist, can confirm this. If you're saying something bad about their parent, they're feeling there's something wrong with part of them.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's not, you should never put your children in a position where they're your emotional support. You know, then you're putting
right.
a tremendous burden on them to be the parent, you know. You know, take on your emotional needs, and they should never be put in that position. It damages them. Plus, you know, if you disparage the other parent, they need that parent just as much as they need you. So
exactly.
you don't want them to make them feel like they have to choose between one or the other parent. It's, you know, those things are, let's call parental alienation syndrome, and it's very damaging to their self-esteem and their development.
Mm-hmm.
So you're right.
Absolutely.
You're absolutely right.
Miriam, I want to talk a little bit about your app, The Mind Warrior.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to tell people about this because, you know, Marianne must have thought I was really very stupid when she first discussed this with me because I didn't know anything about apps a few years ago. I wasn't very smart. I didn't have a smartphone back then. And so I didn't understand the apps. And when I saw the app and I said, oh, my God, this is so wonderful. And I said, you know, and she was saying how much it costs. It was $2.99 then. I don't know if it still is. And
yep.
I said, $2.99. I said, well, I guess that's a good investment of money, $299. And she said to me, no, it's $2.99. And I said, how could anything so important cost so little? You know, but she said, that's how apps go. And that was a learning experience for me. Now I know more about apps.
Right, yeah.
But here, this is an app that helps you recognize triggers whenever you're having post-traumatic stress. And, you know,
yes.
there's different steps of it that you can download. And one of the great things I heard you from the first time we were talking about is say that if you are going to a therapist, you know, for help, this is a great way each week to keep track of what you have to talk to your therapist about, right?
Yeah, because you input into the app the different triggers and emotional states that you're going through and how you helped yourself, and it's all kept there. It's all archived in the history. And there's even an email feature where you can send that information to someone like your therapist or your friend or your sponsor or whatever the case may be. So yeah. Yeah, well, that the app is called Mind Warrior, and it's available
mm-hmm.
in the App Store or Google Play. And I made it in response to how I learned that trauma is healed. Okay, so, you know, you've come to the end of this relationship. You have a lot of healing to do. But also inside the relationship, if you're, you know, really struggling and you're aware that you're having psychological and physical toll of the stress of your relationship, you know, you can use something like this in the relationship because it helps you to deal with the emotional reaction and then help yourself go past the emotional reaction. Help yourself go from helpless to empowered.
Okay? Mm-hmm.
Especially if you're in a relationship where there might be some kind of abuse or manipulation going on. But then, of course, afterwards, to reconnect with yourself mindfully through the body, that helps to heal trauma. So
mm-hmm.
trauma is healed, basically. You have to heal trauma through the body. Because it happens in the body, you know, when the fight or flight or freeze, you know, happens from the stress of the relationship or from a traumatic event, it's all stored in the body and stored in the brain in a weird way that you can't access it like normal memory. It just kind of comes back at you from flashbacks and the rest of the time tries to stay buried. So in order to kind of integrate it and release it, if that makes sense to you, and also
mm-hmm.
to build new neural connections in your brain, it has to go through the body. So those things, that's how, I'm sure everyone's heard of mindfulness. You know, it's a big
mm-hmm.
buzzword now in the psychological community. There's millions of, you know, workshops on it these days, it seems. Because weirdly enough, when we experience trauma, we tend to leave our bodies. Now, I know that sounds a little extreme and dramatic, but when something shocking happens, think of, you know, if you've been in a destructive relationship where there's deceit or whatever, or abuse, when that is happening, in the moment that's happening, it's shocking, right? It's like you can't mm-hmm. either wrap your mind around it, or it scares you or shocks you.
Right.
And in that moment, you're experiencing trauma. The body is in some kind of, you know, fight or flight free state. And then it's kind of like, you know, stored in the body. But you kind of like almost dissociate. In other words, you're not connected to your body. It's in there, but you're disconnected from it. So in order to heal it, you want to, mindful connection is what helps to put you back in your body and back in yourself instead of fleeing from yourself, and therefore starts to heal you, okay? There are other things that do that aside from different trauma therapies and stuff and my app. There are also things like yoga, right? Exercise, prayer, meditation, you know, there are studies on these things too, how they help overcome post-traumatic stress because mm-hmm. they just put the body and nervous system in a different state that helps it to calm down and be healed and be soothed and starts making it feel better. Now, over time, you know, these things happen really slow, like you said, you know, you have to keep going at it. You have to keep doing these things.
But they do help. And in fact, in our upcoming healing weekend, I have, you know, mm-hmm. one of our members who's a health coach. She's going to be doing a workshop on, you know, on meditation and a little yoga. And
mm-hmm.
she did it for us last year in Washington, and it was so relaxing. And just to mm-hmm. be able to get your mind off of everything, you know, to get into that state of mind where you can just feel calm no matter how upset you are, really makes a big difference as far as, you know, getting yourself centered a little bit.
Right. Kind of learning how to soothe your emotional states again in your nervous system, for sure. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And what, you know, what mindfulness really is like inner tracking. You know, you're tracking your body inwardly, you know, kind of learning the sensation of what they call felt sense, which is body sensation, how body sensation is manifesting in a particular emotional reaction. Like, let's say you have some kind of flashback or panic attack. You know, like, you know,
mm-hmm.
let's say someone, you know, they're going to have to face their ex and they know he's mean and they have to exchange the child and they're being difficult, not the child, but the spouse. And so, you know, you have to confront that. So now you've got into this, like, kind of panicky state because, you know, this is happening. So tracking that, mindful tracking means that you drop into your body. You become aware that your heart's pounding, for instance. Or that your whole body feels shaky, or that your mind is racing, for instance, or your neck is tense. And then you
mm-hmm.
maybe do something to deliberately change the state of your body. Let's say you just start some deep breathing, or let's say you do some grounded walking. Lots of different things you can do. And then you notice that you are able to shift that. And now you feel a little more empowered, a little less afraid, a little less, you know, like thrown off. And you do that over and over and over again, and you start to just heal. That's what mindfulness means. That makes sense. It's like inner tracking.
Mm-hmm.
It's
one of the great things I love about.
But it's very profound.
One of the things I love about your app also, it gives the user the opportunity, for instance, there's a weekly review page where you can view your success plan for the week and stay focused. It's not just
mm-hmm.
trigger stuff. It's also helping you feel better because a lot of times you lose sight of what you are accomplishing when something goes wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And by
mm-hmm.
putting down your successes for the week, that I was able to overcome this, or I was able to go through this, or I got through a plan at work, or you know, whatever it was at home you had to do. These little
mm-hmm.
successes build up, and you can keep looking back at them, right?
Right. Well, that's the point of a weekly review is encouragement. You know, you see like, oh, I've, you know, when you pay attention, you see a couple other things about change and healing your brain and your nervous system, opening up neural pathways. Another thing you need is focus, okay? So part of the reason for the weekly review is to stay focused on what you're doing and also to look back and see how you've changed, which is encouraging. And there's another thing in the app for focus, aside from just having something that there that to help you work through all of your things that keeps you focused. But there's also like a daily planning. Like when we plan ahead for something, we do much better with it. You know what I mean? If we don't think about it, you know, it's just something happens, you know, it just kind of takes us by surprise or overwhelms us, right? But if we think ahead and know something is going to happen, and we think about how am I going to be in this situation? How do I want to be? How do I prepare for this? How do I see myself getting through it in a better way? We do. So that's, that's another thing that's in the app to help you daily plan for your triggers and for goals and other things like that. Just focus.
And the other
great
thing about you have also the email option where, you know, you can send it out to your therapist. You don't have to wait till you get there. And, you know, happens to be any kind of, you know, like I say, any kind of information you want to send out, you have that email option. But what I like also about this app is that the history saves the input so you can track your progress. So in other words, it's not going to erase itself after a week. It's going to still be there, you know, for the future. So you can look back and say, wow, look how far I've come from week one to week seven, right?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And it can also help you, you know, focus on goals with your therapist.
Exactly, and see how close you're getting to them and how you can track them better.
Yeah,
so,
exactly.
You know, if people want more information, you can go on Facebook, because a lot of our women are on Facebook, and there's a page for the app called Mind Warrior, correct?
Yes.
Also
on Instagram.
Mind Warrior. And Instagram. Well, listen, I haven't gotten that far in life yet, but I definitely know Facebook. But if you know Instagram, because you're younger than me and more adept at technology, absolutely. Instagram, is that what it is?
Yes.
People should know what that is. And like I say, on Facebook, you can find it too. And also, can we talk just for a few minutes about your help page for, you know, your support group online for destructive relationships? You can find that on Facebook too, right?
No, that's not on Facebook. That's on just a website, destructiverelationshipshelp.com.
Right, I have it up here now.
Twice a month I have a chat, an online chat. And it's a chat room, you know, where you're just, you know, texting more or less. You know, we're sending written messages back and forth to each other. It's not like a Skype session or anything like that where everyone is visible. And that's partly, you know, to keep everybody, keep it confidential. But, you know, it's not ideal, like, to have a live group, but it's something, you know, and there are people all over the country.
Or who can't get out. It's a wonderful group. I know people who belong to it who tell me it's so helpful to them, and they look forward to it so much. But if you go to Destructive Relationships, with an S on the end, relationshipshelp.com, you know, I'm looking at the page, you know, and all the services that are offered here. And, for instance, there's group therapy, individual, online, available now, continuing education for professionals, which is good through Love Fraud. And also support therapeutics. So there's lots of information about what Marianne's group offers here. And plus, you can find Mind Warrior also on this page. So, you know, the ad's on the right-hand side for Mind Warrior. So if you want to go to this page, you can also find that app. And, you know, I think it just takes a lot of work. I think in order to really heal from a relationship, tell me if I'm right in your opinion, you have to be out of it. You can't help heal while you're in it.
Oh, yeah. No, you're only, no. I mean, you can start working on it. You know, you can start, you know, learning detachment and grounding and, you know, coming back to yourself and being mindful. You can do all those things in the relationship, but probably what that's going to do is just help you leave it at some point.
Right. So,
but I'm sure a lot of people are still in therapy, right, when they're in the relationship, and that helps them. Will help them to get out.
Yeah, I say in these marriages, I mean, when people tell me, well, I'm going for marriage counseling. Now, marriage counseling is really primarily for people who want to work through their marriages. But you really need individual therapy when you want to get out of a marriage. And that's something you can do, right?
Yes, yes. And if people are, I mean, I know you probably have people listening from all over the place.
I just want
to give you a few therapies that are specifically for post-traumatic stress.
Okay, great.
There's certain kinds of therapy, and you'd have to go to the websites of these people to find therapists in your area. One is EMDR, which in the website is EMDRI.org. That's a specific kind of very effective therapy for post-traumatic stress. Then there's somatic experiencing. And then there's sensory motor psychotherapy. Neurofeedback. Those are the principal ones. And don't underestimate like the value of things like meditation, yoga, hypnosis, body work, all those things, massage, all those things.
Mm-hmm. Anything to make you calm down and feel better can only help.
Yes, yes.
And Marianne, if people are in the area and they want to go for therapy with you, how would they get to you?
You can contact me through the website page. There's a contact form.
Okay. And, of course, you can always write to me, and I can always forward your information to Marianne or forward you her information. So you can always write to me at bonk@aol.com. My listeners are used to hearing that, bonk@aol.com. So I'm happy to forward you Marianne's information, and they can join your support group online, right?
Yep, yep.
And I think that many of our women
there,
really appreciate that.
Mm-hmm.
Yep, we have women who do attend that, and it's been very helpful to them. So I want to thank you so much, more than you'll ever know. I so much appreciate, you know, you and the work that you do and how your work helps the women that we're working with. And I hope women take advantage of the fact that you're out there and they can access you either, you know, if they live in the Jersey area. What do you say, it's Middle Jersey or area?
Yeah, our group is Middle. Then there's a group in Northern Jersey as well. I don't run
if
that.
You
anyone else does.
Right. Well, Marianne's group is in Middle Jersey, and if you can access it, you know, she'll get you the information. And if not, you can join the online support group. You know, whatever help and support you get is really important help and support. Every little bit is going towards your healing and your recovery. So, Marianne, I hope you'll be a guest with us again this year and a few months down the road.
Sure.
We'll see how we're progressing
sure,
here.
Sure, thank you. My pleasure. Absolutely.
I appreciate it.
And if anyone has any questions about what we talked about tonight, they can also contact me through the website, and I'll be glad to answer them.
Okay, that'll be great. People listen to the show, you know, throughout the weeks because it's always there. So new people are listening different days. So you may be getting more than you think.
Okay.
All right. So to all of our listeners, have a wonderful week. I want to send best regards to my nephew Scott, who always listens to this show, and hopefully learns from every show that we do. And shout out to Pam, who's going to be running our workshops at the Healing Weekend. She'll also be a guest on this show and in a couple of weeks. So we have some good weeks coming up with guests coming towards our Healing Weekend. And we are ending a month with a wonderful guest here, Marianne. Thank you so much. And
my pleasure.
All of our
have a
listeners.
Wonderful retreat. All of you.
Thank you so much. Maybe next year you'll take a trip down.
Maybe I will.
That would be great. All right. Love to all of you.
Okay.
And love to you, Marianne. Thanks
love
so much.
Love to you, too. Good night, everyone.
Good night.
Bye-bye.